31. Search and Rescue.
In this encrusted state, the poison is dormant, but when it touches something moist, the poison activates. Blood seems to catalyze the poison faster than any other liquid.
From Kolvinar Bryum's Bestiary for Conjurers, page 117. Determined to find Felinia, Amundel hurried from his tent with Ildin in tow. The camp was teeming with excitement. The talk of Tevisrols carried through the air as Amundel made his way to the meeting Ildin had mentioned. Several dozen men and women were gathered not far from the tents. Mirodin paced in front of the group, hands clasped behind his back, speaking of the predicament he supposed had befallen Calamir and the others.
"That monster is still out there," he said. "If it were not on the loose, I might not be as concerned. In due time they could reach the higher floors, but time is not on their side."
Mirodin continued as Amundel and Ildin stopped behind a pair of brawny mercenaries.
"Why doesn't he just say that we're going?" Amundel whispered.
Ildin gave him a sidelong glance.
"You don't make a good soldier."
Amundel rolled his eyes. A fluttering of wings buzzed around him. Then Fench zipped past Ildin and over the heads of those listening to Mirodin. Fench carried an assortment of dried meats and cheeses.
"He must really like those," Amundel thought, amused.
"Although I am not going to force any of you to come," Mirodin said. "I'm sure we'll only need a handful of us."
"Why not send an illusion?"
a soldier asked frankly. He folded his arms, awaiting an answer.
"If there are wounded, they'll need help," Mirodin said. "We could very well send an illusion, but if they require aid, that'll only delay them getting to safety."
Several of the men scoffed at Mirodin's reasoning and walked off.
"Cowards!"
Another soldier voiced concerns about the risk, followed by another. Mirodin restated his opinion, and Orin seconded it. Soon a debate ensued.
Well, if no one else went, Amundel could always take his conjurations with him. Now, wouldn't that be a heroic gesture, he thought, grinning.
Felinia was undoubtedly already interested in being with him, but this would send her over the edge.
An assured victory.
"I'll go,"
Amundel said, pushing his way through the wary soldiers and mercenaries. Several started at his declaration.
"They probably think me mad."
No matter. He would rescue the others, even the old soldier, unless the monster had already eaten him.
If I were only that lucky.
"Thank you, Mr. Aramian," Mirodin said, and stopped pacing.
"Master?"
Amundel fought back a grin and glanced to Ildin. The illusionist was still in the back, shaking his head. Several more men and women jogged toward the group, including Fendar and Sylas. The Arpranist's eyes widened as she saw Amundel.
"We'll be leaving shortly," Mirodin said. "Stay, if you're brave enough."
Several more mercenaries departed. The newcomers ventured questions about the gathering. Most of them stayed, including Fendar and Sylas. All in all, there were 23 who were willing to go. After taking a head count, Mirodin leaned close and whispered in Amundel's ear,
"You're not too tired?"
"I couldn't sleep if I wanted to," Amundel said. "And I do."
Mirodin chuckled, patting Amundel on the shoulder.
"You remind me of your uncle.
I didn't know old Cruden had trouble sleeping."
Once the rescue party was ready, Fench led Amundel and the others through the roost. Fench claimed there was a place that could show where the rest of the expedition was located within Tartalim. But he wasn't clear on how it worked. Fench was clueless when it came to the specifics of Tartalim's workings. Amundel walked at the head of the party with Ildin and Mirodin. Fench fluttered ahead, loudly licking the jerky he had taken from the provisions. Some of the women muttered about the winged creature's lack of manners, but Fench didn't seem to care about what they were saying.
"Too busy enjoying his food," Amundel thought, chuckling.
Soon, they arrived at a clearing where a 7-tiered tower stood. It was quite different from the tree-like buildings. Not only was it twice as tall as the other structures, it was made of the same white stone as the rest of Tardalim. Violet moss covered the lower tiers, while multicolored vines climbed its walls. The lowest tier was wider than the rest, perhaps the size of a Soroth city block. The other tiers tapered to a single spire that was perhaps 30 finials across.
"It's up there,"
Finch said, pointing to a balcony protruding from the highest tier, 20 stories above the party.
"And how are we going to get up there?" Fendar asked.
Finch shrugged and continued licking his jerky.
"There's bound to be an entrance somewhere," Maraudin said. "Let's clear that moss away."
The rescue party split up and moved around the tower. They peeled the moss from the walls and hacked at the vines. After several minutes of searching, Orin discovered an oval door like those they had seen throughout the shifting halls.
"If only it had a doorknob," Orin said with a sigh.
He felt at the door, then tried to slide it open.
"Perhaps we need to say those words," a soldier suggested. "You know, the ones Vayam spoke at the gatehouse."
Mirodin turned to the man, not amused.
"And do you remember those words?"
The man flinched.
"There has to be a way to open this," Ildin said.
Green light shone from a groove in the center of the door. The door split open along the groove, then its two halves disappeared into the walls. Amandal chuckled and stepped forward.
"Well,
that worked."
"I don't see how," Orin said.
Mirodin, however, stepped inside without speaking a word. Amandal followed him, sending a mental command for his conjurations to stay put. Despite the overgrowth outside, the hallway within the tower was pristine. Light seemed to radiate from the walls. Unlike the other hallways in Tardalim, this particular corridor was of normal size.
"Now to find a staircase," Mirodin said.
The buzz of Finch's wings filled the hall, and the winged creature flew over Amandal's shoulder. Amandal ducked, narrowly evading the creature's wildly flailing tail.
"Someone's excited," he grinned, watching Finch zip around Mirodin.
The retired soldier called after the winged creature, but Finch didn't stop.
"He really is a child," Mirodin said with a groan.
"Finch, get back here!"
Ildin caught up to Amandal as Finch returned.
"I don't think there are stairs in here," Finch said.
"Then how do you get to the different floors?" Mirodin asked, but quickly extended a hand. "Don't tell me. You fly."
"Yep."
Finch flipped in the air. They passed several doors and other corridors that branched off. Eventually, the hallway emptied into a seven-sided room with doors adorning each wall. Each door glowed with a pale green hue.
"Where to now?"
Ildin asked. Amandal narrowed his eyes, taking in the room with a sweeping glance. Strange etchings adorned each door, like the symbols they had seen in the crystallized gatehouse.
"Start checking the doors," Mirodin said, moving to the right.
Amandal went the opposite direction, and once within arm's reach of the nearest door, it slid open. He set his jaw, but continued forward. A cylindrical chamber lay beyond the opening, barely large enough to fit five or six men. Intricate stonework lined its floor and ceiling, with narrow columns recessed into the curved wall. A large symbol was etched into the floor, glowing a vibrant green.
"Not that one," the voice said. "Two more over."
Eyes narrowed, Amandal glanced to the ceiling.
"Now you're talking?"
He turned back to the cylindrical chamber, but a sigh of displeasure rumbled through his mind.
"Fine,"
he harumphed, and hurried across the hall. The others had discovered similar cylindrical spaces beyond each of the other doors. What were they? Finch fluttered across the seven-sided space, and straight for the door mentioned by the voice in Amandal's head. The door slid open as Finch neared it, revealing another cylindrical chamber. It was almost identical to the other, except the symbol on the floor was different. Amandal stopped short of entering, resting a hand on the edge of the door.
"Do you know what this is?"
Finch shook his head, his trunk swaying. Taking a deep breath, Amandal stepped inside. Ever cautious, he studied the room. Truss-like stonework arced along the domed ceiling, culminating in something that looked like a stony chandelier with gems inlaid within it. Is that a Tevis roll? Amandal turned, but stopped as he faced the wall to the left of the door. Four rows of those strange symbols were etched into the wall. The bottommost row pulsed with dark orange light, while the others glowed a pale blue hue.
Touch the highest row, the voice urged.
Why? Amandal whispered.
Why what?
Finch asked. He fluttered close, slowly edging through Amandal's vision with a cocked head and dangling trunk. Amandal leaned back as Finch's face came within a fraction of a finial from his. That's a little too close, Finch.
Sorry.
The winged creature pulled back in a flash of gray. By the channels, he was fast.
Touch it.
Fine, Amandal muttered, jabbing his finger against the highest row. The pale blue hue darkened to orange, and the door slid shut. Finch squealed while Amandal tensed. A heartbeat later, the door slid open, but what lay beyond was not the seven-sided room.
We're here!
Finch exclaimed, zipping through the open door. How was that possible? The place where Finch had pointed was a good 20 stories above them. Perhaps the cylindrical room moved through a portal? But I didn't feel the effects of a teleportation spell. Shaking his head, Amandal entered a large two-story room about the size of the tower's highest tier. Strange-looking desks protruded from the walls, each with glowing squares and rectangles arrayed across their tops. Across the room was an opened doorway leading to the balcony they had seen from below.
Over here!
Finch exclaimed. He hovered above an elaborate oval table at the heart of the room. Made from the same white stone as Tardalem's halls, the tabletop was thicker than a hand span. A pyramid-like object, with its top half cut off, lay at the table's center.
Is that it? Amandal asked, gesturing to the table. Where's the map?
Finch grinned, then touched something behind the odd pyramid. Particles of white light shot from all around the table, coalescing in the air.
Illusory magic?
The particles formed a sphere as Amandal's name was shouted from behind. He turned as Ildan, Silas, and Mirrodin exited the cylindrical room. The three of them stopped after only a few paces from the opened door, staring past Amandal with wide eyes.
Is that the map? Ildan demanded.
Guess I should look, Amandal thought and turned around. The illusory sphere was much larger now, taking up most of the space between the table and the ceiling. It had turned a transparent blue, with dozens of layers divided into hundreds, if not thousands, of tiny cubes. He couldn't quite tell how many layers were in the sphere, but they only took up half of it. Orange lines zigzagged throughout each of the sphere's layers. Those lines near the outer layers were static, while those closest to the center kept changing. The sphere's center was hollowed out with short fiber-like strands pointing to its heart.
Incredible, Mirrodin murmured.
Amandal leaned closer. Since he couldn't quite discern the inner layers, he did the only reasonable thing. He hopped onto the table and stuck his head into the sphere. He expected his skin to tingle, but it didn't. Perhaps the sphere wasn't made of illusory magic after all. Then he realized that the various cubes were actually tiny representations of the individual sections of Tardalem's halls. They were oriented with the floor toward the sphere's outer edge, while the ceilings were closer to the hollowed center.
That's why the floors are curved, he thought.
Each section's floor was not part of a bowl, as he had supposed. The floor was actually the inside curve of a sphere. Eyes widening, he shifted his gaze to the hollowed center. Those fiber-like strands were not strands at all, but miniature representations of the Tuladine homes.
By all the channels of power, he gasped, searching the various layers. The orange lines passed over each of Tortolim's staircases, which were placed at various angles throughout the sphere. During their trek, they had clearly walked on what should have been the sphere's sides and top. But at no time had Amandal, or anyone else for that matter, felt like they were on anything but the floor. But how was that possible? A wave of disorientation washed over him. He staggered backward, lost his footing, and tumbled off the table, hitting the ground with a thud. The pain, however, was nothing compared to the shocking realization that Tortolim and its shifting halls defied the laws of nature. Ildin could not believe his eyes. How was Tortolim's structure even possible? A sphere buried within a mountain, he thought, and an enormous sphere at that. Two tubes spread from the sphere, one parallel to the tabletop, and another pointing to the room's ceiling. Well, we did enter through that odd tunnel. Ildin stepped closer, eyeing the tube level with the table. Where it connected to the sphere looked like a room tipped on its side with a pair of doors facing what was down to Ildin. So what we thought was up was actually going to the center. That meant some force was pulling them to the sphere's exterior. How bizarre! Chatter carried into the room from behind Ildin, undoubtedly more of the rescue party entering from that cylindrical room. How it brought them from the lower level to the highest baffled him. It was not by means of teleportation. Perhaps a lift, he mused. Ildin had heard tales of such contraptions. The newcomers gasped in awe as they realized what hovered above the table. Ildin, however, walked toward Fench to get a better view. He focused on the orange lines along the sphere's exterior layers. Each had strange symbols within them, symbols that changed. Curious, he thought, tracing the line to a stairwell with his finger. So the lines are roots, Ildin said to no one in particular.
That's right, Fench exclaimed.
Ildin turned to the winged thing. But how do we find our friends? He asked, glancing to Amandal, who was rounding the table.
The dots, Fench said matter-of-factly.
I see no dots.
Oh, Fench said,
those strange lips at the end of his trunk turning down. Is there a way to make it bigger? Amandal asked. Fench beamed with excitement.
Yes! Go out there!
He pointed to the balcony. The winged thing pressed on some lit squares recessed into the table, then something hummed outside. Amandal immediately spun, hurrying to the balcony. Before Ildin could catch up to Amandal, the balcony shifted. The railing liquefied, then a ramp extended over those tree buildings. It spread at a slight angle toward the center of the roost. The ramp ceased moving about 100 finials away. White light shone at its end, then burst in a brilliant flash. Rubbing his eyes, Ildin stepped onto the balcony and blinked several times. He started as another representation of Tortolim filled the air, much larger than the one atop the table. Ildin found himself smiling broadly.
How beautiful!
Fench fluttered into the balcony through the illusion of Tortolim.
Look over here!
Amandal and Ildin hurried toward Fench, stopping at what Ildin counted as the 19th layer from the sphere's outer edge. Dozens of yellow dots filled one of the cubed parts of that layer. There were also two yellow dots with red in their centers, and another that had orange at its heart. Why are they different?
There are your friends, Fench said.
So they're on the 19th floor? Amandal asked. But there should be more of them. Ildin quickly counted the dots. 76. He bit his lip. Could there be more elsewhere? Amandal asked, his tone urgent. He was probably worried for Felinia. Fench flew through the illusion, making several sweeping passes.
I don't see any.
Perhaps that monster had attacked them as it had tried with Ildin and the others. The monster, Ildin thought.
Finch, where is the monster? Do you see it?
Finch shook his head, his trunk swaying.
What color is it? Amandal asked.
Black and orange, Finch said.
He fluttered off again. Finch made more passes than he had before.
It's gone. But it can't be gone.
Perhaps it can hide itself, Amandal said. No matter. We need to get down there and fast.
Mirodin hurried up the ramp, stopping beside Ilden.
What did you find? The squad leader asked.
They're on the 19th floor, Amandal said, and we need to hurry before that monster returns.
Mirodin decided that Fendar would remain at the odd map of Tardalim. That suited the illusionist just fine. Fendar made two illusions, one to fly through the shifting map to discern the right course, and another to accompany the rescue party. While Mirodin led everyone from the tower, Amandal reclaimed his conjurations from his friends. They divided the creatures amongst themselves as they had before, but Fendar left his enthralled earthen giants to guard the camp. Along the way, Mirodin had ordered the mages to cast various spells upon the party in case they ran across the monster. Once they left the roost, Finch led the way. Though Finch claimed to know how to find the others on his own, Mirodin still wanted Fendar to relay directions. Their descent from the 32nd to the 31st floor was quite swift. They had to backtrack only once. Though they were not trying to beat the shift, Mirodin pushed them to run through each level they descended. Once on the 28th floor, Fendar informed the party that the others had ascended to the 20th floor and were moving toward a nearby staircase. The route from the 21st to the 22nd, however, was considerably longer.
We can catch them there, Amandal thought.
After reaching the 22nd floor, Mirodin demanded a report from Fendar.
They're not even halfway to the stairs. It's a straight shot from where they're at, though.
A shift will happen soon on that floor, Finch said.
How soon?
Mirodin asked. Finch shrugged.
Soon.
Mirodin shook his head and sighed.
Fendar?
I have no way of telling,
Fendar said through his illusion. I assume it's these symbols in the roots, but I can't decipher them.
Be prepared to redirect us, Mirodin said.
Hold on, Felinia, I'm coming.
With renewed determination, Amandal bolted ahead of the others. He and his conjurations had to be the first thing Felinia saw. Fendar's illusion zipped overhead, keeping pace with Amandal.
Take the third right, follow it zigzag. Then it's a straight shot.
Amandal nodded as Finch fluttered beside him.
Why are you running so fast? The winged creature asked.
I intend to save someone, Finch, and I need her to see me before anyone else.
Amandal soon reached the stairs. A feminine figure, more divine than anything else in the world, floated in the air.
She's alive, he thought, his heart taking courage.
Felinia's illusion spun toward Amandal. The expression on her illusory features became overjoyed.
Amandal, she cried through her illusion. You're safe.
Though Felinia's illusion sped toward him, Amandal did not slow his dash. Once he had joined the illusion, it kept pace with him, studying him with wide eyes.
What happened to you?
It's a long story, Amandal said, but I'm here to rescue you.
Rescue me?
Felinia cocked her illusion's head, then noticed Finch. She looked surprised.
What kind of creature is that?
I'm Finch, the winged creature declared.
She blinked once, then looked behind Amandal. Darting to the steps, Amandal led his conjurations down to the 21st floor. The larger conjurations cleared the stairs in several leaps, while the smaller ones skipped only a few steps at a time.
Why are there so few of you? Felinia asked.
The others are safely in the roost, Amandal said, leaping from the bottommost step and bounding into the hallway.
Once we found out where you were, Mirodin and I put together a small group to bring you and the others to safety.
The illusion furrowed her brow.
The roost? My home, Finch said.
It's the highest floor, Amandal added. Undoubtedly where Vaim wants to go.
How many of you are left?
Felinia asked warily.
All of us, Amandal said.
The illusion looked taken aback.
You're lucky.
Her words were haunted.
I take it you fought that monster? Amidal asked.
You encountered it too?
Amidal shook his head. Only saw it. Is that old soldier still alive? Felinia's illusion nodded.
But he's strange. Something happened to him.
That's it? Amidal wondered. You're not going to say more?
Not now, she said. Oh, I see you.
Amidal shifted his focus down the hall. Several hundred finials away, a wide row of men and women, shielded in barjan bubbles, stretched from wall to wall. They approached at a belabored gait. One of the women, enveloped in a violet bubble of magic, broke formation and ran toward him. Felinia. I do have you now, he thought, grinning. Why else would a woman run so enthusiastically toward a man? Felinia's disintegrating barjan dissipated amid her dash. Once near, she spread her arms. Perfect. Amidal slowed, but continued his advance, readying to catch her. They met, and he wrapped his arms around her, twirling to break their momentum. Before coming to a stop, Amidal commanded his conjurations to halt.
Oh, Amidal.
Felinia's eyes widened with relief. She pulled herself close, resting her forehead against his. We need to hurry, Amidal whispered. There is no... Felinia pressed her lips against his in a passionate kiss. For a moment, Amidal forgot they were in such a perilous place. She pulled back, raising her eyes to his.
I've missed you, you big oaf, she whispered,
then pressed her lips to his once again. Amid their embrace, Finch fluttered around them.
Why can't she get that close?
Amidal stifled a laugh, interrupting the kiss. He and Felinia turned to Finch, but before Amidal could answer, orange light erupted within the hall in a blinding flash. With one arm around Felinia, Amidal spun. Alarmed gasps echoed throughout the hall, followed by hurried incantations. Behind the frantic survivors of the expedition, that enormous black monster settled into a wide stance, an orange haze misting from its body. Amidal started and Finch squealed. Where had the monster come from? Had it been invisible? And what was that blinding flash?
Give me the Tuladine, the monster bellowed, and perhaps I will let you live.